Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, good morning to all the best people I know, and that would be you. And wow, if our guest today is not an inspirational earth angel, we need more people like Sheila Wysocki in the world. I am telling you, what an amazing human being, and I'm just so privileged and honored to be able to have her share her shine with us, because if there's one person that we can definitely say turned something horrible into something good, it would be Sheila. Now, many of you have probably already seen her on A&E's, or I should say biography channels, I Solved a Murder. It's a new television series, and she's the second premiere feature in that series. And on biography, I'm sure that you can go, and whether you're on Comcast or wherever you are, you can catch the replay and find it under biography. I Solved a Murder. Well, it was originally aired this Sunday, February 24th, and Sheila's also been an hour-long feature on Dateline, and she will be featured on Anderson Cooper Live on March 18th, so you want to mark that down in your calendar as well. Now, she's also going to be, the story will be a book, a major motion picture, and I tell you, this message needs to get out. What did she do? Well, she solved a 26-year-old murder, a rape, of her college roommate, Angie Samato. This Tennessee mother, Sheila Wysocki, is working to prevent others from a similar fate. This led Sheila to creating the nonprofit WithoutWarning.org Fight Back, which teaches self-defense, prevention, and awareness in protecting yourself. Sheila works on cold cases both locally and nationally, including missing persons, rapes, and murders. In just the past 6 months, Sheila has solved over 10 cold cases. Well, what did this require? It required her becoming a private investigator. She overcame dyslexia and breaking through an unhelpful Dallas Police Department. But her persistence paid off, and Sheila is hoping to prevent others from experiencing a similar fate to that of her friend Angie. And this is a quote from her. She says, "If we had this knowledge in 1984, we would have saved her life." You really need to go to www.withoutwarning.org, and you have to see the show on Biography Channel. It's phenomenal. What an honor to have you with us today, Sheila. And thank you to Anne, who is representing you. She's the great PR person as well. And what an amazing human being you are. Sheila, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on. Everything you said makes me feel so good. But I'm just your average mom, you know, so all those things sound really good, but I'm like everybody else.
Well, I think that, you know, there's certain things that really resonate for me, and I think for the listeners, you really challenge all of us to know that we are extraordinary in the ordinary if we listen to our heart, follow our passions, and don't give up. I mean, what you've done and what you're doing throughout the world because of this, I mean, Angie just must be like she must be your guardian angel and just so grateful for what you're doing. Let's share with listeners the story back in 1984, what happened.
Sure.
And then we'll take them through what you did, some of the obstacles. I tell you, the hope and inspiration that I have for the human race watching your story is just like unbelievable.
Well, in 1984, Angie had gone out for the evening and with some friends and then went back to her condo and opened the door to the man that ended up murdering her. There was a knock at the door. She opened it, and a 6'2" person, 285 pounds, walked into the condo, and he asked her if he can use the bathroom and get a glass, and use the phone. Sorry, and he cased the place, and she went to the phone and picked it up and called her boyfriend, and was trying to give him clues that things were going wrong in her condo, but she didn't flat out come out and say, "There's a man in my condo and I'm scared." She didn't leave the area. She just talked to him and tried to give him clues. Again, we didn't have that education or knowledge back then, so she didn't know what to do. The man saw her on the phone and got her off the phone. She hung up unexpectedly on her boyfriend, and he then, the murderer, drug her into the bedroom and raped, and then there was a knock at the door, which was her boyfriend. He had driven over because he was concerned. And at that point, the murderer put his hand over her mouth to keep her from screaming and started to repeatedly stab her to death. And then her boyfriend kind of, he didn't know what to do either, drove around to see if she was in the parking lot of the condominium, and then drove to a secondary location that she had mentioned on the phone, and then came back and called the police. Now, there was not 911 back in 1984, so he had to go through dispatch and things to get to the phone, get to the operator. And then they sent out two local officers to the scene. And that's when he found out that she was brutally raped and brutally murdered.
You know, and I think that it's really important what you just said. We didn't have cell phones back then in 84. We didn't have DNA. I mean, the situation was very different. So when you say somebody knocked at the door and asked to use the phone, you know, we have to remember that that wasn't necessarily as uncommon as we might think, you know, today with everybody having cell phones. And I think it's, you know, painful, but I think it's important. This was a very evil. I mean, she was stabbed 18 times. I mean, it was really pure evil, wasn't it?
He stabbed her so much that the responding officer was a 20-year-old officer, female, who walked in, and she described it as if Angie's heart had been cut out of her chest.
Ugh.
And that he had broken bones with the force of the knife. So yes, it was. I hate to use the word overkill, but I can't think of any other word. It was such hatred. And we know now this man has such hatred for women anyway that it just kind of goes along with his profile.
But, you know, at that time, the suspects weren't the actual person that was discovered to have committed the murder. Let's share with people what happened. It was her boyfriend Ben, and then there was Russell, who was another gentleman that she had gone out with that
night.
Give listeners a little bit about, you know, why they thought it was who and what was available, because the only, you know, there was no DNA. There was this secretion and non-secretion. Give listeners an update of that.
Of course. The back in 1984, there was no DNA. We didn't even know that word existed. But we were able to get blood typing, and we were able to eliminate, the police were able to eliminate suspects based on blood typing. And there were three suspects: Ben, her current boyfriend, Russell, who went out with her that evening, and her ex-boyfriend, who had pulled a knife on her months earlier. And so those were the three suspects at the time. And then they were slowly eliminated. Her ex-boyfriend was eliminated because he lived in Amarillo, and he was seen at work that night. So he was gone pretty quick. And then Ben was gone after they did the blood typing. And then Russell was our only suspect at that time. And Russell, he was a very quiet young man and didn't say a lot. So the police kind of went down the road with, well, they actually said to me, we believe Russell Buchanan murdered Angie. And they went through why, that she probably turned him down for sex, and he forced her, and then knocked at the door, and he had no way out. So that was where the police went. And then they did a lie detector test on Russell. At first they said he passed it. And then they came back and said, looking at it a second time, he did not pass it. And again, you know, back then, those were the only tools available to us in 84, 85. And so that is why they zeroed in on Russell. Plus, the night that she was murdered, that next morning, no one could find Russell for 2 days. He had left to go to a wedding in Houston. So it was like he was fleeing the area. And so, you know, that is another indicator for the police officers.
And also, too, when he came back, weren't they, you know, he was speaking with them, but then he got a lawyer, and then didn't he leave the country? Wasn't that one of the things that was like, okay, if you're leaving the country, maybe you're guilty, you know?
Right. He came back, they surrounded his condo with all these police officers pointing guns at him, made him get down on the ground, and he didn't know Angie had been murdered. So, you know, he opens the door, and there's the Dallas police force with guns pointed to him screaming, "Are you Russell Buchanan?" And he, you know, said yes. And then they took him down to the police department and interviewed him for hours and hours. And they would follow him and bring him in after work more than once. Several times. And then he, you know, proceeded on with his life. Finally, when it got to the point of what he felt was ridiculous, he got an attorney, and it stopped. So the police told me, oh, you got a high-powered attorney. We can't touch him. Then he applied for, I guess, graduate school, which was out of the country, and he left, which, of course, you know, I was meeting with one particular officer for quite a while, and every time we met, he would say, well, this is the reason. This is the reason why we think it's Russell. Give me just enough to believe it was Russell. And he said, he's leaving the country. Why would you leave the country if you were innocent?
Well, I think that that's, you know, I think that people listening can understand, okay, we're in 1984,
right.
You know, you've got this information, and they couldn't rule him out because, you know, even though they didn't have the DNA, he was tested, and he did have that non-secretion. So,
yeah.
You know, with what they had available, and then, of course, leaving the country, you kind of think, okay, he's got to be guilty. But then what happens? The case just nothing happens.
It went cold, completely cold. And so they let the case go. And I ended up getting married and moving to Tennessee. And the case went cold for, well, 20 years.
Unbelievable. Okay, so if people out there listening are thinking, if this was my loved one, my family, my daughter, my sister, you know, you were heart-wrenched about this going cold. And imagine the pain of 20 years. Nobody even calls, nobody finds anything. It's just mind-boggling to me. And, of course, there was no cold case team really at that time in Dallas. But you called them constantly, didn't you? You were calling them in that time. and following up, and weren't you getting things like, oh, well, the evidence was lost in a flood, which actually was, I hate to say it, but just not truthful, you found out later. You know, let listeners know the type of thing
sure.
you went, because you made hundreds of calls.
I actually, the first month that I called, I left for the original officer 50 messages. And, you know, that's actually light for me. But I thought, I don't want to overwhelm him. So I kept leaving him messages. And this is somebody I worked with in 1984 to ask questions to suspects, to bring information to the police, to go out to dinner with these people. I mean, it was not somebody I casually knew. This is a man I invited to my wedding. I had a relationship that he knew I was very serious about this case. And he totally ignored my calls in 2004. So between 2004 and 2006, I kept calling. Finally, the information I was getting was, well, we don't have the file anymore. It was lost in a flood. It was misplaced. We don't have the evidence. The evidence is gone. I mean, every time I made a phone call regarding that case, it was a lie. It was because they did not want to deal with me. They didn't want to have to deal with going back through that case. And at one point, I was told, we have thousands of unsolved cases. And I told them, I only care about one unsolved case. What do I need to do? Mm. And I understand that the police, they're overwhelmed with how many unsolved cases. But if you're having someone who is willing to do the work, let them help. Wouldn't it be better to write off another? This is a human being. And, Deb, this is something I really want people to understand. This person mattered. This was a vivacious young woman who could have made a difference in this world we live in today, who would have given to society, not taken. So besides being a good friend, she was a good human being. And it was such a tragedy that had happened. So we needed to find this guy.
And, you know, the other thing that I should have mentioned that, you know, you were always thinking of her, but did you have, you had a real powerful vision of her. It was almost like a premonition where she was just saying, you know what, you need, you know, it's time now for you to do this.
Right.
And you ended up getting your private investigator license to be able to get into these files. You know, tell listeners about that because
sure.
I think what's important is that for everybody listening, we all think we can't make a difference. We all think, you know, if we get blocked, that we just give up. And you're living proof that there is a way. There is always a way when there's passion, dedication, and a good cause. Tell listeners what you had to do.
I believe that in 2004, when I was sitting on my bed doing Bible study, that when Angie came to me, and I mean that her physical being was right in front of me, that was a sign. And it was what I call a God nod. He nodded to go ahead. And I knew Angie so well from living with her that she would always come to me whenever she was in trouble or whenever she needed something. So I knew it was the moment where it was time, and I wrote it down in my diary. It's time. Picked up. That was the first phone call I made to the Dallas police. So I knew we were on the path of something was going to happen in that case. I didn't know what, but I had enough faith to follow it. And every time I got a no or I couldn't get past it, I just pushed a little harder. So I did go. I'm dyslexic, and it's very difficult for me to read. So I went I live in a gated community because of the murder. I'm very security oriented. And I went to the head of security and I said, you know, here's a case. What do I do? And he's the one who said, you need to get your private investigation license. I will sponsor you, and you will make a great private investigator. So they helped me, and I did have help along the way. I had people like this J.D. Skinner who, you know, put out his hand and helped me up to do this. The second person, and then probably the most important person, was my son. My son read me every book. He read me every, the test was not, I acted like I was studying for Harvard, but it wasn't that hard once we got through it. But we studied as if I was taking the law exam.
I know. I mean, what a... Most people don't have that type of experience with their son, but he, you know, I think that his dedication and enthusiasm, I mean, that's another testimony, because so many people were involved in supporting you in this because, you know, as you said, this is a life. 20 years have gone by, you know, and this is the way that you were able to create some type of action. But having the private investigator license didn't really open up all the doors magically.
No.
You thought it would. See, I you know, that happens in life. Why is that? But eventually they did end up getting a couple of people there, right? I mean, bring people up to speed with this.
Well, what happened was I got I was so annoying that they finally put someone, I think it was patronizing me, to having me leave them alone in a way. So they gave me this wonderful woman who's named Linda Crum, officer, and she called me. She was part-time, and she actually started working the case. And she was bright, and she understood it, and she got it. And she made that phone call, and you know what? They had the DNA. And you know what? They had the fingernails. I knew back in 84 we had scrapings, and I knew we had semen. So it was preserved. And God loved those women who did the autopsy and the medical examiner. They were fabulous at preserving that evidence.
And that's 20-something years. But, you know, what? Of course, this was after you had been told for a number of years that they had lost all the evidence in the fraud that didn't exist. But but you did. But the DNA did get tested, and it's pretty shocking what happened. Tell listeners about that.
It came up. They went through the CODIS system, and it came up with this man named Donald Andrew Best, who I had never heard his name, didn't know who he was. He didn't hang around in our circle. He wasn't at Southern Methodist University. I had no idea who this guy was. Do you want me to tell who he was?
I think you should, yes.
He was a 5-time serial rapist that had been out on parole and raped Angie during that period.
Out on parole?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
But now, when you found out who he was, this man out on parole, he was actually back in jail at the time.
Right.
So what happened? Because you actually met him at trial, didn't you?
Yes. He was still in jail for another aggravated rape, and he was supposed to be serving the life prison, but life doesn't mean life sometimes, so they do get paroled. And he did come to the trial. When he walked into the room, it's a moment I had prepared for, actually, because I knew emotionally I needed to prepare for it. What I did, and don't laugh, but I had to do it, I started watching ID television and watching the cases just to see how it's going to run through my mind mentally to prepare. So I went in and I sat down and waited for him to walk in. And literally, when that man walked into the room, it was a big courtroom. It was like all the oxygen had been taken out of that room. And I looked over at him and I thought, that is the last person she saw when she was living. And that is the purest of all evil I've ever seen in my life. And I hope nobody ever experiences him again.
Unbelievable. And I can't imagine, I mean, and you know, when you watch everybody, the bio channel, you'll see this man's face and you can feel the evil coming through, you know, the television screen. And I think that, as you said in the beginning of our time together here today, you know, you're young and you're innocent, and this rocks your world that there is evil and it does exist, and it just shakes your whole perspective. I mean, you definitely can't be naive. Hence, you were living with your family in a gated community. But this man had committed and hurt so many other women. I mean, that to me is the phenomenal part about it.
He was a horrible human being to these other women. And originally in 84, I did not live in a gated community. I lived with my mom, single mom, and I was so scared that I slept on the floor next to her bed for months.
Unbelievable. You know, I know that you've got some other, you know, scheduled interviews because people really want to hear your story.
Oh,
but,
thank you, Deb.
You know, I think that this is a terrible tragedy, and it's wonderful to know that, you know, DNA and some of our new technology is able to help us. But I think that your dedication and your perseverance, and now you've started an organization to help rape prevention. Tell people how they can get in touch with you, because you clearly are making a difference for a lot of people to not have to suffer this.
I want so bad to get the education out there. When we were sitting in trial and I was looking at this man, I kept thinking she could have gotten away. Angie could have gotten away. Had we had the knowledge and education back then, she could have done something, had a plan. And so I started Without Warning Fight Back. And you can get in touch with me through withoutwarning.org. I have all my contact information on there. I do work on cases, but I only take one case at a time. And currently I'm working on a missing person case. And the girl's name is Holly Bobo. And we're coming up to our second year anniversary of her being missing. And she's a Tennessee girl. And so that is the case I'm working on right now. I do get thousands of letters of people that want me to work on their cold cases. And I would love to help each and every one of them. But I think it's better to work one at a time.
I tell you, Sheila, it takes each of us to make a difference for all of us. And what an example that you are. It's a terrible tragedy, you know, this terrible story. But what you're doing is you're bringing something good out of it. And I hope you're out there listening and you're going to connect with Sheila. You're going to share this show with a friend and watch it on bio. You can see it on replay and you'll be with Anderson Cooper. It's March 18th. Is that
actually
when that will be?
Actually, tomorrow. They're going to air it
tomorrow.
He moved it up. We met, and he moved it up to tomorrow. So I'm going live tomorrow. I hope I don't throw up on stage, but I will be there.
Well, listen, I tell you what, it's been a privilege to have you show and with the listeners, and you're making a difference in the world. The world needs more people like you. And again, I know you have another show to go to right now. You're in New York, but thank you very much for what you're doing, and I hope that you'll come back and inspire us again.
Deb, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, God bless you. I'm telling
you.
You
too.
I just, a big love hug through the phone wires. You know, you are an earth angel, if there ever was one, Sheila. And I just want to again thank Anne for all of her help and Blog Talk Radio for making you a featured live show, as it should be. So we'll all be looking and excited and saying our prayers for you to just make that impact that you will tomorrow on Anderson Cooper. Thank you so much,
you,
Sheila.
Thank you, Deb. Okay,
all right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, if you've enjoyed this show as much as I have and you've been inspired, make sure that you connect with Sheila at withoutwarning.org. Watch that show. I'm telling you, it will change your life. Bring a friend. Share this show with a friend. That's how you can keep us going and growing over 750,000 listeners. Post this show with Sheila to Facebook. Make sure that you help others prevent this type of terrible rape. This is what we need to do to help each other and pay it forward. Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Share it with a friend. Download it on iTunes. Connect with Sheila. We all help each other. Go out and make it a blessed day, and you will surely be blessed. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.